Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his method. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind.
Hello?
And every other professor on this campus.
Hey, what's happening?
Are here to help you.
You hear me?
To find, take back, and keep your righteous mind.
Welcome to Conversation with Black Socrates. I have my brother on, Mark Lane. Anybody that's a regular listener to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is our Wallet Uncut conversation. What's up, Hollywood, as I like to call you, brother?
Hey.
How you doing, man?
What's going on? What's happening? How things out there
in the
ATL?
Yep. Got you out there, you know, living in that California life, man. So thanks for, you know, taking a few minutes to get in with me with these pop-up shows, man. We just put them on the spot, man. So, you know, I got you on right when the intro was coming in, but, you know, people didn't hear that before. So nothing new again for all the regular listeners. If this is your first time tuning in, again, this is, I am your host, Black Socrates, as we call these pop-up shows, Conversations with Black Socrates. And, again, I have on a good friend, brother, my best friend out of the academy, for those that know that I went there, Brother Mark Ranger. Brother, you was recently recognized by Savoy Magazine, man. I just wanted to just give you props, man, because you just only doing everything that I thought you would do. Well, basically, when I first met you, man, you really have literally been everything I thought you would, man. So I just want to say congratulations on that recognition, if you wanted to even just touch bases on that yourself.
Nah, my man, thank you. Thank you for that. And, yeah, I mean, it's an honor. And Savoy Magazine, they do every 2 years, they do a special issue in which they recognize the top 100 most influential black executives, essentially. And it was actually a surprise to me. The editor reached out, L.P. Green, actually out of Atlanta, because they're based out of Atlanta. And he had gotten referred to me by, I guess, some mutual contacts. And they have a committee, business committee, an educational committee, an academic committee or other, who review what I understand to be 500-plus profiles of professionals and executives, so on and so forth. And mine was one of them. And he called me, and we had a talk, found out more about everything that I had going on and what I was doing. And in their final selection, they decided that that I would be included in the 2018 list of most influential black executives. So it was definitely something that was unexpected, but bring a lot of pride, and my mama was definitely happy.
Hey, speaking of your mama, man, that's exactly where I want to go, man, because as I kind of open it, you know, again, it's not like we don't even do a big backdrop, you know what I mean, for this show.
Right.
We don't say, well, you know, what's your background? We don't do none of that, man. We just chop it. And so,
right.
As I said at the beginning, man, that basically you kind of, in a sense, turned out exactly like I thought you would, or really our circle of friends thought you would. And the reality is, you know, we met you at the Air Force Academy. You know, we met the preparatory school. You was an amazing football star. And, you know, as we was all getting to know each other, you know, you come out of high school, everybody's kind of, you know, giving their little accolades. I walked on, but, you know, listening to all you guys as we recruited, everybody was kind of, you know, giving their accolades for what they had accomplished in high school, which is pretty normal for any group of college kids playing football together and things of that nature. And one thing that was unique about you was, we found out your accolades a little later down the line, man. And I say that, what I mean is, you know, as soon as we got our basic training, of course, we ready for football, and everybody's kind of bragging about what they did. Kind of wasn't your style, and as we kept finding out, you know, we knew, you know, you was a quarterback and that kind of stuff, but come to find out, you was a quarterback at a big-time high school in Texas. For anybody that know anything about that football skyline, you know, you was kind of, you know, the lead guy, did a lot of amazing things there. But the thing is, you didn't lay it out up front. like most of the cats did. I wasn't bragging because I was walking on. So, you know what I mean? So, you know, I was just in the circus saying, hey, I'm trying to make the team.
Yeah.
You know, where you guys are already recruited, man. And I just kind of say that to say, we kind of discovered and you end up becoming Hollywood because as we discover how good you was in football, you know, we get into the classroom and you knock that out real easy. And, you know, and the reason most of us at the prep school is because, you know, academics wasn't necessarily bad. I never did figure out why you went to a prep school. Because you were killing it in the academics. Then come to find out, you know, over the following weeks later, because you wouldn't just give out your accolades and say, well, I've accomplished this and I've accomplished that. You were kind of humble, even though you was the star. Come to find out you was some level degree black belt. You was the fastest to get the black belt in school when you was living in Atlanta. So, you know, you probably know, I remember all this stuff, right? So,
and then,
and the ladies love, you know, we got a few ladies at the school anyway, but they love you, you know what I mean? You know, like, we had, you know, some football players. So, if anybody that don't know or hadn't seen the picture I put up, you know, for the most part, you know, you're a good looking brother, man. My sister saw that. So, you know, you got the charm, you're smart, you're athletic. It was almost nothing you couldn't do. And I remember our brother Dre, I know I'm kind of running my mouth, but I always wanted to set. At least set up this early going, man. And so as we was finding out you could do all these things, you was like the fastest person on the team. So these things just kept coming up. And our boy Dre, he was like, man, I'm going to call you Hollywood because you can do everything. And I ended up one day, I was the one to say, well, can you draw? He was like, nah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Draw.
Can't draw.
He's like, nah, brother. But I can't draw. But I say,
see
Hollywood, because you can do everything but draw.
That's right. I remember that like it was yesterday. That's
bro.
Great. I remember how that came about, and I remember that exact statement that you made. That's hilarious.
I was like, what can't you do, bro? Because you know
yeah.
what I mean? And by this point, every other person then told you what they did. You know what I mean? We sitting at lunch, and just over time, Dre find out something, Mickey find out something, B-Funk find out something, I find out something. They're like, hold on,
right.
man.
Yeah.
Who was this
yeah.
brother sitting amongst us?
Nah, man, that was a lot of fun. Well, of course, you talked to Mickey. You know, he going to say he was the fastest, so there might be a debate there
right,
about
right,
who was
right,
fastest.
Right. It was a debate between you and Mickey. It's real talk. That's a real
yeah,
talk.
Yeah, yeah, but no, man, it's funny you say that because I remember that like it was yesterday, and it was good. It was a lot of fun to be able to have those times and get to know one another and do all of those things and talk about it. But, yeah, that's when Hollywood came into existence, man, and it's all because of you all. And I feel like, you know, as you were talking and I'm thinking back on that, and for the record, by the way, the reason I was at the prep school because the academy was one of the later ones to recruit me, and my SAT
okay.
scores actually weren't that great. So,
okay.
So,
yeah, I never do. I ended up taking that thing a whole bunch of times. You know, I hate to interrupt you, but
yeah.
I don't. You must have got it pretty quick because you weren't in there as much as I was in there. Yeah, I stayed
yeah,
in there a whole year.
Yeah. Wait, are you talking about? Yeah,
let me clarify that for anybody listening. So what happened was we went to the U.S. Air Force Academy, but we had to go to the preparatory school because we didn't quite have the exact scores to get directly in. And for those of us who didn't have the SAT scores the Academy wanted, they would make us take the SAT and the ACT continuously until we got the score that they needed. And unfortunately, myself, I have the world record for SATs and ACTs because I ended up never getting a score and had to get a waiver. So I took 5 ACTs and 5 SATs at the prep school alone. And I just don't remember you being in there with me, man. So you must have got the score pretty quick after the prep school because I didn't know why you didn't make it in.
Well, I don't think anybody was in there as much as you were, Smitty. So that might be a little
I never got the score, bro.
That's not a good barometer. No, but you worked your tail off.
Yeah, that's real
though.
Tough.
That was, Nah, you worked your tail off. No, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, that's where Hollywood came into existence, and it stuck ever since then, man. And actually, you know what's funny is it's ironic that I ended up being in L.A. and ended up, you know, ended up building a career out here after the fact, and it just all ended up coming together and fitting. And that name, I take a lot of pride in it primarily because of you all, because you all gave it to me and the reasons why, man. And so, that brings back a lot of good memories.
Right. So, you know, for anybody out there listening, hopefully they're getting a little kick out of, again, one of the top 100 executives in the country right now. We're speaking to Mark Ranger and just giving that backdrop from, you know, when I first met these brothers, man. But here's where I wanted to go, man, because you've been on the regular show many a times. And, again, I just wanted this to be a raw and uncut conversation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell you this, man, and I don't think I've ever really said this to you, but, you talked about your mother, and I said that, you know, I kind of wanted to go there. And so, of course, we were fortunate enough in building that type of friendship. Your mother and father eventually would come out there and visit. And it was just your mother's nature to kind of take us all in. And it was, you know, kind of nice to kind of have, you know, everybody end up, she ended up being Ma Ranger to a lot of us, you know, even the names that we've mentioned,
right,
and even some that we haven't mentioned at this point. And it was just her nature, man. And it's just this level of sweetness that she carried, and your father was just kind of stoic, sit back, take it all in, and it was almost like we came to admire your father because of who you were and because you spoke so highly of both of them. And, you know, it was clearly, even with the relationship you and your father had, I mean, you obviously was your mama's baby. And but again, you know, in showing you love, she kind of showed that love, you know, to all of us. And I'm bringing this up, man, because based on our relationship, You were that one, in a sense, that had that mother and father, you know, completely behind you. And it was something that probably a lot of us, without thinking about it, about our age, desired. But I just know personally, I admired you having that situation that I don't recall, and I may be wrong, but I don't remember the rest of us having that situation that was in our we had a nice sized crew. And I don't, it may have been somebody else, but I don't remember anybody necessarily having, in a sense, both parents available.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But not just that. It was just once we met them, you made sense, brother. And I don't know if you ever even considered this, but I'm just telling you as a brother from you know, me to you. And again, I mean, I definitely know people that have both parents, so I'm not saying that by itself. You understand what I'm saying? But you,
right,
everything that we bestowed upon you made so much sense when you were kind of telling us, you know, your time in Atlanta, and you, over time, we came to understand how involved your mother and father were, you know, in the Dallas area, if I could say that. And you just kind of share, because again, they became our surrogate parents, because they would come see you, and we look forward to, like, hope you get to go hang out with Hollywood, because my lady, she go, you know, treat everybody right. And, you know, but the thing was, man, when I think about you having that type of experience, I've seen a lot of people kind of in your shoes. They're arrogant, not even maybe attention, but just kind of have, well, I'm, you know, assuming some of the upbringing. I don't know all of it to the exact extent, you know what I mean? You know, what your experience, all of it. I don't know it to the detail, like maybe your friends you grew up with. But what I'm saying is having both parents be that involved, pour into you that much, you always was humble, again, which is what I hope people was hearing, because, again, you didn't just tell us all your accolades. It just came out over time. So you were humble, despite having this burning desire to kind of be the best at whatever you do. Like, we always understood that about you. We came to understand it. So what I'm saying here is you have this innate burning desire in yourself that's to be respected. So I'm actually going to ask you a question, even though we normally just talk, but here's the question. Like, help me understand, again, your own inner desire, but how did your mother and father play a role in you having those expectations of yourself? Because they had to, because they seem to be that those same type people.
It's, coming up, it's interesting you point that out, because even I think about
high school and all those days, most of my immediate friends also didn't have both parents. You know, they typically had their mother, but the father typically wasn't. And I was one of the few, fortunate and blessed to be one of the few that had both parents. But to your point, I mean, my father, you know, was everybody's dad. My mother, definitely everybody's mom, because she's going to be all in everybody's business anyway. But she definitely is the type of individual, you know, to take everybody in. And then, like you said, in college as well, when we started to get to know one another, and she was always so interested in all of you all, you know, in your lives, and would always ask about you and pray for you and want to know what's going on. And it was incredible to do that, and I love my mother for that. But to your question, it was I come from an educated family, but not a rich family, but a very determined family, meaning that my mother was an educator her entire life, and she gave her entire life. My father was an attorney, very educated, Morehouse College, full scholarship to Morehouse College, ended up getting the full scholarship to go to Harvard Law School, and decided instead of to go to Wall Street and instead of going to take a job there to come back to Dallas in the community and be an attorney on behalf of disenfranchised individuals in the community. And it's been a life of public service for my family, and they instilled in me, my mother instilled in me the understanding of love and the understanding of happiness and the understanding of appreciating other people and how important that was to appreciate other people and respect other people. And my father, without a doubt, instilled in me excellence. You know, it was, you know, the do what you do so well that no man could do it any better, you know. Living dead and yet to be born, which is the old Benjamin E. Mays quote from Morehouse College. But he instilled that in me, and understanding, he always used to tell me, you got to pay the price. That was what stuck with me. He said, you got to pay the price to live a life. And he always used to say that to me. So, you know, friends out playing and, you know, I'm doing this or practicing this or training for this or doing sports. He said, man, you got to practice, man. You got to pay the price. If you want to be the best and you want to be great, you got to pay the price. But it always stuck with me. And I had parents who lived a life of public service. I had parents who did pull into me and wanted me to understand the value of hard work, the value of excellence, the value of respect. And it just stuck with me, man, my entire life. And I so appreciate them for that and was blessed to have parents who cared that much about me and were willing to sacrifice. And for that, I mean, I owe them everything I got. And in turn, they wanted all of that for all of you, all my friends, everybody. I mean, to this day, you know, my mother wants to know what's going on with everybody to this day. And so that, without a doubt, I know is what shaped me to have a mindset. Because that's what it's about. I mean, I think, you know, as kids, we really are shaped by the environment, and it's not about what people say. It's about the habits, and it's about the disciplines, let's say, that are instilled in you that end up sticking with you for the rest of your life, and that's definitely what I got from my folks.
Yeah, man, because, again, you definitely, everything they put into you, you lived it out, so I know that, you know, they're overly proud of, in a sense, the son that you, you know, that you've become to them or whatever. That's what every parent wants, right? You want the child to be better than you and things of that nature. And you're now setting up that same type of legacy for your children now, because that's who you are. That's what you speak to. I mean, the quotes that you just said, like you would always say them in college was kind of, you know, all consider ourselves relatively smart to a certain extent. I mean, you know, getting the history, and we would learn quotes and things. But you kind of came to the game with those quotes, and you live by them. Like, you didn't say, "Hey, here's a cool quote." You just kind of would say, "Here are the ones I live by." And you know, the two you just said, you were saying them back then. You was coming to college equipped with that and living that out and playing it out. And so, brother, I see you as the epitome of what our community could be if we could get back focused on just the simple aspect of what you just talked about, the environment
right
that's created by a two-parent home with two parents so focused on pouring into their child And like you said, for them, with that life of service, now I really understand how you were always able to remain so humble but confident. You know, you never took no mess. You know, super
right.
confident. I even remember, probably one of the hardest things we went through, and we didn't talk a whole lot about it because I didn't end up continuing to play football, but I know that one of the hardest things that you probably ever went through was, you know, last couple of years with the football team out there where, you know, you're this immensely fast, talented receiver for the, you know, whatever, once they figure out that's where you're going to play, and they had big expectations or whatever, but in a sense, you were used improperly. And I would love to ask you about that period because at the end of the day, you got the coaches saying you're everything, but they're misusing
right.
you. And you, someone who's always strove for excellence, and you know, you didn't just do it for the highlights. You still had
right.
highlights despite misuse, plenty of highlights
sure.
despite
That's
misuse.
Right.
But I can imagine how difficult that was for someone who had so much and kind of going through it. My assumption is through no fault of your own is how you probably felt, man. What was that like?
It's interesting that you even have that observation, because I don't even know how many people actually would be able to articulate that observation. And, you know, for those who are listening, obviously they wouldn't be able to, but anybody who was close to the scenario, that was one of the most frustrating periods of my life, because I knew what I brought to the table. And outside of some injuries, because I did have some injuries that played into it too. But outside of that, I absolutely do believe that, whether you call it being misused, whether you call it, coaching, whatever the case may be, it absolutely was one of the most frustrating periods of my life, because even though I did still have highlights, I had high points, I made plays, did all those things, what that career could have been, I think, is still left to be desired. So it's something I think about all the time, but you can't live in the past. But it definitely was one of the most frustrating and in some cases disappointing periods. It's funny because after college, I couldn't watch football for 2 years. It was tough, college or pro. It was just tough for me to even watch. And, you got to be able to move on. You got to be able to live life, and you're going to have disappointments. Things aren't always going to work out as you plan. And sometimes, you know, other people, unfortunately, are in positions in which, you know, they're able to dictate certain things that might have an impact on that you can't control, and that was one of those situations. So, it definitely is one of the most disappointing periods of my life, but, you just got to move on, man. And in the end, sports for me was, it's what got me to the academy, quite frankly, because I never would have been there without football. There's no doubt about that. It instilled in me something intangible, that I think gets instilled in men, and I think football in particular, like any other sport, instills something in people. It changes you internally. It leaves something with you. The challenge, the determination, the overcoming fear, getting hit, getting back up, pain, endurance, all those things that I got from football, you know, that never leaves me. So for that, I'm thankful for football and all that it gave to me. And in the end, I still was able to have a college career that, you know, 95% of people never get to have. So, you know.
Right. Good talk.
You know.
And let me say,
so
when
I think about it
from
that little thing. Yeah.
Right. And let me just throw this too, because if I recall correctly, and I'm going to ask you another question about that, but if I recall correctly, you had, which is no vindication when it comes to, as you said, a career that could left to be seen, obviously you'll never be able to relive it. But if I recall correctly, you even had one of your coaches maybe a year later or some time after your career to say, you know what, we did mess up with you. If I recall correctly, like at least someone relayed something similar to you or whatever, where it was kind of all in your mind and wondering could have been this, could have been that or whatever.
Right.
Again, it doesn't change the opportunity to have a career. But, I mean, that's just huge confirmation because I would recall feeling that way back in high school, and it stayed with me a lot of years as an adult, so I can imagine experiencing that right into leaving college and going into a career, how that stuck with you.
No, that's true. And, you know, having that said definitely at least brings some confirmation to it. And, yeah, it was stated to me that they made a mistake, you know, with the way that they played it and the way that they did it for whatever reasons, which I guess didn't really matter at that point in time. But at least that gave some confirmation to it that could, you know, give me some sense of not peace about it, but at least freedom that I wasn't wrong about how I was thinking. You know? And so yeah, that actually did happen. It's amazing your memory on these things, man. You're bringing me back a lot, but this is like one, and I know we're talking about sports, you know, and in the grand scheme of things, some people might say, well, it's just sports, it's just football, but you know, it's still your life. And I think that a part of my life, along with other challenges and things that I face, you know, you were talking about quotes earlier, and my grandmother, she actually, my favorite quote of all time is from my grandmother. And this situation we're describing makes me think about this, because back to talking about things, well, not back to it, but in this example you're bringing up, I think it's just an example of things that we may go through in a life that sometimes you may live in the past, may hold you back, or may even stop you because you demotivated or whatever. Well, my grandmother, she, long after she passed, my Aunt Blanche was going through her Bible, and she was flipping through her Bible, and there was a page that was stuck together. And in that page, there was a note handwritten by my grandmother that she didn't even know was there, had never found, had never seen before. And she pulled it out, and the note simply said, in my grandmother's writing, "Life is never yesterday. You drown in yesterday. Life is now." And it had never seen it. I'm telling you, she had never seen it. She showed it to me, and I said, "Aunt Blanche, I gotta have that." I mean, so she framed it for me in my office, and that is my favorite quote of all time. And this example that you know when you brought this scenario up, that's what it makes me think about, because that's one scenario, but there are a lot of scenarios in my life, your life, everybody's life, where we get stuck in the past on stuff, you know what I mean? And we get stuck, and it stops us.
I definitely messed that up.
Yeah, we get stuck because we're so stuck on that.
Let me get this quote,
because
I'm writing this down, brother. I'm taking notes, because anytime I'm around, y'all got to take notes, bro. You just like that, brother.
No doubt.
Life is never yesterday.
No. Yeah, life is never yesterday. You drown in yesterday. Life is now. Simple. That's it. In my grandmother's writing, in her Bible, that had never been seen before, and that to me is the epitome of how, you know, I go forward and try to live my life, and that's a scenario that reminds me of that, because I was stuck for a while because of that. You know, it's just regrets. It's what could have been, what could have happened. You know, what memory is lost because of that, and what didn't you get to fulfill? But you got to move on, and there's other things that you're gonna be able to accomplish in life and doing life. And in the end, you know, you're getting up another day to have another shot. Let's focus on that.
Hey, man, what's your grandmother's name? Because I got to put that up on Mental Dialogue, and I want to get credit where credit's due, brother.
you want to be able to put it up, huh?
You know, I won't. If it's your baby, I'll leave it alone, man. But I don't, you know me. I don't know how Facebook does it, but somehow I saw some picture that said 8 years ago. I know I didn't put it up, but it was on my timeline. I'm cool as a house of death. But you was in the picture. Mo was in the picture. There were a lot of the young brothers, you know, from the academy. And I put on a caption. I was like, man, I was in the center of the thing, looking away from the cameras. You know, I never want to take pictures. And I was saying that, but this is back when I was, you know, referred to as the newborn warrior knowledge. So when you hit me with something new, man, you know it's me. I'm finna go give it to the world. But again, if it's your baby, I won't do this. But man, that's something everybody needs to hear, man. So I'll say, whoever listening to this podcast, they're lucky. Life is never yesterday. You drown in yesterday. Life is now. That's gonna be the quote
that's
for the
right.
rest of my life. And I'm 44, but I feel like I'm about to grow up with that quote.
I'm telling you, it's something special, and it's something that, like, you know, like you mentioned, has guided me, and you know, when you bring up that example, it is that's what it makes me think of. You know, is that we're going, you know, you always have these times in your life, and you got to be able to know that you got another shot. You get to fight, you got another day. You better wake up and be able to do the things that you're able to do. And that's what, you know, what she was able to bless me with, so to speak. And it's something, like I said, that I had no idea about. And by the way, that picture that you mentioned, I think I did just see that picture. Where did you find that picture anyway?
It was on my timeline on Facebook, man. I'm clueless. So I just forwarded, you know, I almost didn't want to forward because I was in a picture. You know, I don't like being in pictures. But yeah, I was like, wow, yeah, they just got sent on my house. It's just on my timeline. One of them, they said 8 years ago. I'm like, well, I know I didn't put this up on my timeline. So I'm clueless. Clueless how that picture popped up. Because usually when they show you an old picture, I'll be aware of it. This one was, I'm like trying to say myself, I was like, was I even on Facebook 8 years ago? Which I don't think I was. That's why I was even more crazy to me, you know, just to say
right.
That, man. But let's relate it to, you know, again, you know, we done told people you were top 100 executive, so I can only imagine that experience, even what we just talked about, can you relate to it in the sense that did it ever play out, that being able to get through that, did it ever play out for you as an executive? And you understand what I'm saying? Like, a lot of times when you go through something, you learn how to get through it. Now you'll have kind of like a deja vu in another area of life, but you're better prepared for it. Did you ever have anything similar to where, the, you know, you getting up from that per se helped you in your executive life? If I could even just throw out some type of, you know, analogy like that.
Well, I mean, so when I got the best example I can give, as you asked that, is when I got out of the Air Force, I just finished up my MBA, and I was decided that I was going to go into a career in wealth management and finance and build a financial practice from scratch. I got offered a number of different jobs, six-figure jobs, to go do this and that, and instead I decided to go do something where there was no guarantee and I would have to build something and earn what I'm worth, so to speak, and a lot of people said that I was crazy or, you know, should probably go a more safe route, and I remember going to do that, and in the first 2 years, literally being broke, scratching to try to figure out my next meal, how I was going to fill up my gas tank, trying to speak as at the pawn shop on Crenshaw because I needed something to be able to survive. You know, every bill you could think of about to shut me down, you name it. And it was happening.
Wow.
And I was trying to figure out how to get by. But the question that I always needed to answer, and it's funny because it actually came from my father, like when I was going through all of this and I would talk to him and he would ask me, he would say, do you believe that what you're doing is going to get you to where you want to be in life? And he said, if the answer to that question is yes, then you do whatever the hell you got to do. And if the answer to that question is no, then you need to make a change. So since the answer to that question was yes, I was willing to do whatever it took, and it became a, okay, you can't focus on what happened yesterday. You're going to drown in that type scenario. You got to focus on the day and what you need to do to get you closer to where you're trying to be. That is
wow.
Absolutely an example of needing to have that perseverance, but also an example back to, you know, what you mentioned about how my folks poured into me. I mean, I had my dad to be that rock to ask me the tough questions, not to tell me what to do, but to ask me the tough questions and allow me to make the decisions, but important questions to help guide. It was guidance. It's discernment. It was real discernment. And, helped me to do that, but that absolutely is one of the prime examples I remember in my life. And so, you know, delayed the gratification, paid the price, went to do it, but it absolutely was one of those, if I still focused on what happened the day before, it would be real easy for me to say, forget this, I quit, I'm going to stop this journey and go do something secure with a stable income and you know, just be safe. But that absolutely was the start of what became the career that, you know, I was able to build up to this point, and it meant something.
Man, and my guess is, what, maybe TQ, he was out there, like, who's even hip to it? Because as far as we knew and understood, again, no surprise that you were leaving the Air Force to go on to your own career. That's kind of, you know, the life you want to live. Like, you always made it clear there was a certain way you wanted to live. Again, we believed and knew that you were. And in building that practice, it took all your time. And so I remember, you know, with the fellas, because, you know, we would meet every year. You would kind of keep up with it, and eventually you couldn't because you was always busy. And some people didn't understand that. You know, you and I maintain our relationship
right.
because me understanding this, what this brother's trying to do, and, you know, we were all busy, you know, either in our military careers or whatever we wanted to accomplish, but coming out of it, you know, I got out as well. But, you know, all of us want to accomplish certain things, but you was next level with it. And so I remember every now and then I would touch bases, and I know I would be the one to say, bro, I get it. You're good. Like, I want to see you.
Right.
But it turned into a thing of people that we were real, real close with that eventually was like, well, why Mark didn't show up for this? You know what I mean? And,
that's
and,
right.
You know, and it's calling it real candid to the extent of even maybe missing a wedding, which is kind of unheard of amongst real good friends. I mean, just calling things out for what it was, but it became
right.
a habit to the extent that Mark's not going to be here. And
right.
I know personally, because I would touch bases and give you a vote of confidence, it always bothers you and always hurts you. Like, people didn't
sure.
understand it wasn't necessarily what you wanted to do, but it's what you had to do based on where you wanted to be. And people, and plenty of these same people are very successful now, but a lot of us look up to you because of the level that you wanted to reach. So if you could just even, you know, in a sense, talk about that for anybody that's out there with that burning desire. Again, you already laid out, like you say, you're punting, you're punting speakers, and now, you're one of the top ones, you know, top African American, you know, business executives in the entire country. So to have that background, so for anybody that may be listening that really says they want what you want, what they want, if they really want it, you know, what do you see as the process that's even different from people that are, you know, like comfortable in life? You want to be more than comfortable. That's how I understand
it. Right. That's right. So when I think back on that time, it definitely was a frustrating time. It definitely was a time in which I knew that making those types of sacrifices, not being able to come to weddings, not being able to see you all, not being able to do certain things that everybody else was doing, it's a tough decision, and it's something that is not easily understood for others. But I do believe that a factor in success, a factor we need to teach children, a factor that as important to you being able to achieve what you need to be able to achieve is, if you are living your life for other people and you're not willing to delay the immediate gratification that may come with things like, okay, I feel the responsibility to go to this wedding, or because I know I'm going to have fun and also make other people happy, or I feel a responsibility to do X, that lack of sacrifice, let me say it that way, will delay your ability to actually achieve what you're trying to achieve. Other people will be happy. Other people will be satisfied, but that's not actually getting you to your goal. And the willingness to sacrifice and work until you reach your goal without that immediate gratification is one of the biggest and most important pieces, because you can't go along to get along. You got to be strong enough to not worry about whether or not you fit into somebody else's agenda. And that's one of the worst mistakes that you can make. And actually, and this is a side note, not because I didn't make bad mistakes because of my friends, but there are a lot of people who make some of the worst mistakes in their life because of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are influenced to the point that you can't stand on your own to make decisions around what is important that you need to get done to get to where you're trying to be in life, it won't happen. And that's what I had to decide. I had to decide, okay, where am I trying to be and what does that mean it's going to take? That doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean it's not going to hurt some people. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to understand, because everybody won't understand. But you got to be able to help yourself first before you can help everybody else. And I don't think that is wrong. I think in some way you have to be selfish in that way. If you're going to achieve great things, you look at anybody that's accomplished anything great, they will tell you the same story. And by the way, I'm not trying to say that I've accomplished everything by any means. I'm still working at it. I still got a lot more to do that I want to achieve. But that is absolutely, to answer your question, something that I think is important that people have to understand and need to incorporate in how they go about doing their business, because you can't live your life for other people and thinking about what other people think and worrying about that, because that'll ruin you trying to please everybody.
I mean, I hope people heard it when you mentioned, you know, again, when you took this step in this direction, you literally did turn down six-figure jobs. And that's crazy when you think about what most of our generation always heard from the standpoint of, you know, get a good education, get a good job. Like, that's what most of our generation heard, especially with African Americans. And we're now, you know, coming to see that that ain't always the best advice. It's good advice for certain people, still to this day, but we kind of heard it kind of as a blanket thing, and in a sense, the college degrees in certain areas got saturated, and you were always particular, and I'm assuming maybe some with the help of guidance of your father, you was always particular to ensure that you didn't fall into that. So you've now, in a sense, achieved, in a sense, that idea of what maybe we saw in success, once you realize we're not going to be pro athletes, you know, every kid goes to that little period, right? But, you know,
right,
once you get
right.
through that period, the next thing is great job, you know, great, you know, good college, great job. You turn that down to become so much more. And the beautiful thing about it now is you also now have your own business in addition to that, which almost seems unthinkable.
Right.
When in my mind, I think about how many hours executives typically have to put in for their company. So if you could just even briefly mention, like, how are you pulling that off, man? Because when I've had you on the show before, moneymotivation.com, to put it out there, we talked extensively about that previously on the previous show. But again, you told me it was always a goal of yours. So it's like, man, how does somebody have to put in this much time for an executive company and now kind of got their own thing? Like, how are you pulling that balance off, brother, if I could even ask?
It's when you believe in something or passionate about something or have a vision about something that you want in life, I actually think that you figure it out. I think when it's outside of your control or things that you're doing because you're forced to do, or you have to do, then it does become a balance that you're not really motivated, and so you're going through the motions. But for me, my career in the financial industry, my business, my apparel and publishing business with Money Motivation, are passions of mine, and they're things that I enjoy. They're things that – not everything. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. It's not Pollyanna. I mean, there are always going to be things that I do that I just don't like doing. I mean, that's not what I mean. But the core – of it is one in which there's, you know, I got one life, and in that life I want to leave a legacy, and I want to try to accomplish as much as I can to have an impact on other people, to make money and to be successful and to change, create change. And in that light, balance of time becomes something that I'm willing to commit to do in order to achieve that vision. But it's much more difficult if that's not there. If that vision is not there, you don't have a passion about something, you haven't quite found that thing, yeah, I think it's definitely difficult to balance the time, but you make the time for the things that are important when you're trying to do it. That doesn't mean it's easy, because it's definitely not easy. It's tough. But I think that, you know, when you're able to find that in your life and you're able to move towards that, you end up making the time and figuring out how to get it done.
For the caller that's out there on the line, if you want to get in, please press 1. We'll let you get in your 3 cents in on this discussion. If you're just listening, that's cool too. If you want to get in on this nice discussion, the number to get in is 464-787-1691. Again, that number is 646-787-1691. And press 1 to let us know you want to speak. So, yeah.
And one other comment on that. Before you move
please,
on that, one other comment. One other comment on that. The other thing I'll say is we all have a lot more time than we try to act like we don't. I mean, if you look at the amount of time that we waste in any given day, in any given week, everybody's got more time than they claim for the things like this that are important or the things that you're trying to get accomplished, if you compare that to the amount of time you waste. So when people say they don't have time, I'm talking about the things that are important. You're going to make sacrifices and that type of thing. When I'm talking about the things that are important related to your career, related to the things you're trying to get done, starting a business, whatever the case may be, there is time that is wasted that you could redirect to anything that is important to you. So I think there's a premise there that I'll challenge always too, of people saying they don't have time. You have time. If you think of it, it's a choice.
Yeah, matter of fact, I'm going to speak on that because I went to a thing here, Brothers United, and one of the lead brothers there, he was kind of talking about that specifically, and he literally put up this circle thing and said, all right, everybody has 168 hours in a week, right? And so when he breaks down how much time you spend working, if you have a 40-hour week, you know, the average 40-hour week, you can bump it up to 50 hours for some people, right? But if it's 168 hours in a week, and let's go ahead and use the 48 hours, and you are one of those people that gets your full 8 hours of sleep, which most people don't. We know that most Americans don't get 8 hours of sleep. So that's 40 hours for the work, 56 hours for sleeping, and the rest of the week is for eating, showering, traveling, et cetera. That's going to average out, again, 7 days in a week. If you give yourself, even if you have a long commute, that's going to come out to about 35 hours a week. And if you think about that daily, that's 5 hours to travel to and for work, you know, to work, get all your 3 meals in, get all your cleanings in, and that's a lot of hours, right? 5 hours a day. Well, guess how many hours left over in the week? 37 mm-hmm. hours.
Yeah. Right.
37 hours. And you see, when you really look at that pie chart, you got just as many hours left over as you spent working, but you would never see the week that way, you know, because we're locked in and you go to you, especially if you're, you know, having to go to that job or whatever, a 40, 50 hours a week. But to think you got just as many, you know, I mean, I've never thought about that, right? So I saw this chart. Like, you really have almost just as many hours to
right.
build your stuff. That you have to work on.
That's right.
But you think of it today, well, if I sleep and I wait 8 hours, well, you can't tell me I got another 8 hours, my choice. Like, it doesn't seem like that when you put it in that manner. But that's kind of what you're talking about. There's much more time than people realize because
right.
we are notorious for wasting time almost unknowingly because of our habits.
Right. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely think that it can be made. It's a choice, just like it is with most things that we do in life. And if something's important enough to you, you decide you're going to figure it out.
Nah, very, very impressive, man. So I don't even want to, you know, keep it that long, man. It was really just a quick chop up. But if you will, man, I do want people to understand that this clothing line you got is absolutely amazing. They can go and hear the conversation with smart people with Mark Ranger and hear all the details to moneymotivation.com. But for somebody who's just not hearing about you for the first time, and again, big props for being recognized, as you said, unknowingly as one of the top 100 executives in the country. So another big up on that. But if you will, man, I want people to hear the premise for why money motivation is so important to you, because I think that alone will make people understand why they should go buy moneymotivation.com. Like, I hope they heard what they like about you, what I like about you, why you my boy, and all that kind of stuff. But your premise behind moneymotivation.com, man, is super impressive. And so if you can kind of share that, and it will kind of end it with me kind of talking about how you marketed it, which was very different than most people. So I'm going to share that story, too, before we go.
For sure. And money motivation, for those that may or may not be aware, and most probably won't be aware in a year in existence in terms of what it is. But it's an apparel and a publishing business that I formed around this concept of money motivation. It's a success and lifestyle brand primarily for the self-made, meaning those individuals who are making something out of nothing, who are coming from nothing, things weren't given to them, things weren't inherited, and you have to make a life for yourself. And I wanted to be something that was more in your face around figuring out how to have the motivation to be able to get an economic base and be okay with that and be okay with the fact that that is at the forefront of how you're thinking. I know some people talk about if you make money the focus, you won't really be rich or that's not what you should make the focus, and I fundamentally disagree. I think that money absolutely should be your focus. There's nothing in the world that you do today in which money does not matter. And as long as the values surrounding that are just and good, there's nothing wrong with you making that be at the forefront of how you approach it. And as a matter of fact, if we're ever going to have any true control, any true decision-making power, ownership, the economic base is what matters. So the premise behind the following of money motivation is that we have a belief, I have a belief, that people who never give up, people who never give in, are the people who will actually influence the world. And we represent that. And so it's about the next generation of creators and business leaders and entrepreneurs and hustlers and high achievers who are breaking the mold, and they're looking to make something out of nothing. And the mission behind it is really to produce the high-quality products in terms of the apparel, but also content, because there's an educational component to this, which is the publishing side of things, which has also been expanded, that embody that lifestyle of hustle and excellence and freedom that really come with those who are motivated by being able to create a better life for themselves, because autonomy and freedom is really about the goal. Money is not the end game. It's freedom. It's autonomy. So the concept of the apparel line is to promote that lifestyle, and then the concept of the publishing side is to provide the content that feeds the mindset as well as some of the strategy and tactics on how and what to do and how to think about it. So that's what it came about, and it's definitely a passion of mine. Again, a lot of great buzz, and the clothing line obviously is dope. So that's where it came from.
I love it. Let me check on this caller to make sure they're not trying to get in. Area code 520, last 3675. Are you just listening, or did you want to get in? I just wanted to make sure I checked on you.
This Chip, man, I'm just listening, brother.
Okay, sounds good, brother. Because you went on when you went in and out. I didn't know if he was trying to push once. So I was
checking.
We gonna keep it moving, brother. What's up, brother? Hey, that's Rico Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. I say, what up, Chip? What's going on?
Okay, man, so I didn't know if he caught it. Nah. It's all to the G, brother. We're gonna keep it moving, man. We're gonna wrap this thing up with Hollywood, man. But nah, man. Death. Here it is. I want everybody to hear what it just heard. So, just let's rephrase that. Cold in line with the educational piece. Again, you're breaking the mold. And here's the beauty of how you brought this brand. And the clothing line is amazing. You know, I'm rocking the clothes all the time, showing them on Facebook. I love it. You know, I bought my sweater. You know, just doing the. In the holidays, man, I love that joint.
Yep.
Man. But with that said, the way you brought this about, man, most people come with their product, and this is, I just want people to understand how this brother thinks and how it can help anybody listening. So people kind of typically come with their product, and then they say, well, how am I going to market this thing? So you get the product, and now we're in the social media age, so you get the product, then you try to get a whole big following. Because now you got this product that you want to sell them, so you keep marketing and marketing and marketing and marketing, try to get the product out, and, you know, or you get the book first or whatever. Well, when you first explained, I'm like, brother, you got a following. It. And I'm like, what's the following for? And you was like, well, I'm going to have these products eventually. So it was almost like you went backwards and having a following. You spent the money on how it looks. Again, you know, your excellence, again, you're talking about excellence, so it looks excellent. So people were able to, you gain momentum with a following before you ever had a product. And that's an approach that I absolutely adore and wish I had thought of it. You feel me? So I just thought I had to bring it to the table when I talked to you today, because when I told you I see what you're doing, I remember you was like, you picked me, brother, because you just was doing it. And I'm sitting there saying, brother, when you put this together, it's a little different. Me having been in marketing, you know, in the music industry for a little while. And you was like, what are you on to? You know, in so many words. So if you could just even speak to conceptually, because somebody that may be thinking of doing something like you, I'd rather them take your approach than the typical approach, because the typical approach is saturated, in my opinion.
That's true. So one of the things, anything in business, entrepreneurship, anything you do is, in addition to being committed and hustling and being able to put in the work like we talked about earlier and the sacrifice to do something, I think you have to be willing to take some risk and you got to be willing to think differently. And that approach for me was really on the concept of, you know, the psychology of human behavior is if you give and give and give and give, eventually people are going to trust you and, you know, for free. I mean, people are going to trust you. And they also in some way are going to feel like they need to reciprocate, especially if it's something of value. So my approach was if I can offer something of value, give content, give, you know, dope knowledge, pictures, quotes, newsletter, information, all of these various things around a brand idea, around a brand idea, all centered around a central concept. And then from that, be able to dovetail off a product, then people who are following and feeling like, oh yeah, I know this brand, I trust this brand, I'm aware of this brand, I like this brand. Now you have something more to offer that I can actually buy that can represent it. Yes, I'm in. And so that was the concept that I took. And I do believe that if you give value without an immediate expectation, with the intent of building trust and building a following, you'll have a platform where you could speak on and basically do anything and sell anything forever. And that was the concept that I wanted to take. So I invested probably a good, 9 months to a year. I think it was a year in just giving before even anything related to the apparel line was even mentioned. And then continued on from there. And yeah, it's worked from the standpoint of the following and the buzz and being able to build a baseline of an audience that we can go to and I can go to, I believe, at any time to offer something and keep building on it.
Yeah, I mean, quite amazing, brother, because I think what happened was I called you when it was like, oh, you got a clothing line, because you had been just killing the game with, I like following what you're doing. I mean, you understand, you my boy,
right,
or whatever, and you
right,
boom, like, hey, clothing line coming soon, and as one of your followers, you was like, what? Hold on, I'm confused. What do you mean clothing line? And matter of fact, that's what
right,
it was. I called you and go, I'm your boy. How do I know you got a clothing line coming out? And you just basically was like, well, I'm busy, and I meant to tell you, but this is what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? And so
that's right.
Like, you brand it first. That's what's unique. You brand it first.
Brand it
so
first.
I just hope
right,
that little gem can play a role for anybody that may peep what we're talking about right now. You literally brand it first,
and that goes with your personal brand too. Because people don't remember you; they remember your reputation, and that's your brand. That's what you stand for. That's what you're known for. That's who you are, and you need to build a reputation around that, which is your brand. And from that, you can do anything personally in terms of your career and life, but also from a product standpoint, if you build that and make it something that's known that people can believe in and follow and stand on. And that's what that was built around. So, yeah, that was the concept.
Yeah, I want to solidify what you just said, because many of us who are now in this age of understanding, we need to own something. Entrepreneurship is definitely a push within our community. And so I really want people to understand literally how what you did is very different from this standpoint. So in me, for example, jumping into business and trying to turn this idea of mental dialogue into some type of, you know, full-out business, because I was just doing it in barbershops as kind of a, you know, my baby. I love sharing information, love giving people knowledge and opportunity to talk about things that matter in our community. So, you know, you were the first person, as a matter of fact, you were the first person I called when I wrote the piece that ended up birthing mental dialogue. I can tell you that story another time because I don't want to keep it too long, but anyway, so in me trying to figure out and become a business owner with this unique business, and it didn't have to be a unique business, but any business I try to record label in the past, and so I did what people typically do. So you try to get up some money, and so all right, I'm going to start doing business. You kind of know you don't quite necessarily have enough money, but, and you know, I will say one thing that was hard to figure out with mine is, at least in my personal opinion, because there was no blueprint, it wasn't some type of business that in effect had been done before, at least that's how I looked at it, it was kind of difficult to know, well, I need money for this, because it didn't have, like, set things like the record label had some years ago, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? I could kind of go look at what other record labels had done and try to figure out, okay, well, maybe I don't have the budget they have, but I could do something similar to, you know, to that record label, but maybe on a, you know, a different level, and then come up with a couple of creative ideas. In this area, everything was completely creative, but based on, you know, what I've been doing as a hobby per se, I look at some of that. Anyway, I felt it to say that I jump out of business, and as things being as professional, as tight as I want them to be, sometimes I couldn't do that. Sometimes it might be lack of finances. Sometimes it might be lack of equipment, or, you know what I mean, I'm getting by on a shoestring budget, and at the time I had a regular job where I'm trying to, you know, spend time on my job, and then I got a situation that you know about this, when I got let go and didn't have any money coming in, but I'm trying to keep my baby going or whatever. And anyway, keeping them in a dialogue was very difficult. And so sometimes, unfortunately, based on either sometimes lack of finances or wearing too many hats, I end up cutting corners that I prefer not to cut. And so I'm bringing it to the table that when you say your brand is your personal brand, when I saw what you did with Money Motivation, it was exactly who I know you to be. Excellence, professionalism at all times. And so you connected the two, as you just said. People confuse maybe their business and their brand and try to separate it from who they personally are. And you're big on what you just said. Those two have to go hand in hand. And so I find myself having to recover in some areas because I didn't present it that way first. That's why I wanted to, you know, just have a candid conversation and bring it to the table. But I find a lot of our business owners sometimes, like, for example, when we're frustrated with others, we'll say black-owned businesses don't do this or don't do that. And a lot of times it's just us not understanding that they're wearing too many hats. And so sometimes maybe the customer service ain't up to par. Maybe this one area was lacking that day because somebody's out, you know, in a sense. You know, they don't have 10 employees. They got 3 employees. And so, you know, I try to bring that to the table to say, you know, sometimes it's too many hats being worn. And so it makes it hard for that business to present themselves as they want them to. But you wouldn't do that. So kind of, you understand what I'm saying? Like, they're that dynamic. And you wouldn't even dare present yourself that way. So, you know, what do you say to somebody out there that's trying to, you know what I'm saying, kind of trying to bring it together and get things to be exactly how they want to present them to the public, whether it be a restaurant business, a brand business? Like, how do you recover? Because, in a sense, I think you would say first impressions is everything. Sometimes people have lost. Is there a way to recover in your mind? Or what do you say to somebody starting out not to make the mistakes I made, if that makes sense?
Well, I believe you can. I mean, you can reinvent yourself or your brand at any time. And by the way, all companies, all businesses, all everything evolves. So while you may start down one path, the end game where you end up may be completely different. So I don't really think it's necessarily a mistake, or even like the example you brought up was necessarily a mistake. What's most important is that you do get started, it may evolve over time into what you want it to be as you learn and as you grow, as you try different things. But I think the key to it is always thinking about everything that you touch related to that business or related to that is representing you and your brand. So the decisions or the filter for the decisions that you make have to be, is this representing what I stand for and my reputation and what I'm trying to build? Is this in the context of that? That doesn't mean you can't be provocative. That you have to be provocative in marketing. That doesn't mean you can't try to experiment to push the envelope. What I mean is this representing the brand and the standard and the reputation that I'm trying to represent versus trying to do something gimmicky because you're trying to make a sale? And that's what people... It might happen for a one-time transaction, but you're trying to get lifetime customers and a lifetime audience. And if you think long-term in that way, I think your decisions are different about how you approach things. So I absolutely believe the most important thing is to get started. I'd rather somebody get started and go down the wrong direction than not get started at all. I want to be clear about that. However, because you can make changes. You can make changes. You know, there's a lot of people complacent that don't do a damn thing. But I'd rather people get started and make mistakes. However, as you are getting started, or even if you're already in business and doing a lot of different things, you can reinvent yourself and your brand at any given time, but it does start with thinking about what you want that reputation to represent. It starts with thinking about, is there a disconnect between how you perceive yourself and how other people perceive you? And if there's a disconnect, then you need to fix that. And taking, you know, the proper steps to be able to have the brand represent where you're trying to go long term and the audience you're trying to build. Because in the end, you know, if you got a business with no customers, it's not really a business and it's not viable.
Nah, fair enough, brother. So, well, with that said, man, lots of amazing advice. I'm still tripping off your grandmother's quote. I won't put it out publicly, but I'm going to use it in my life.
No, no, no. Let me go back to that. Let me go back to that, because that was a bookend. That was a bookend. Listen, that, by all means, you, anybody on this call, that is my grandmother's legacy. There's nothing in me that doesn't want everybody in the world to know this. So that was more of a bookend for me to come back and say, hey, man, put it out there. My grandmother's name is Blanche May, M-A-E, Ranger. That is her full name, Blanche May Ranger. And life is never yesterday. You drown in yesterday. Life is now. I know we kept talking and I didn't come back to that. But, yes, absolutely, man. Put that out. Anybody, you know, and you know, that is my grandmother's legacy, hands down, and something I live by every single day. And I think it's a philosophy that can help anybody get further in life just by remembering it.
Yep. And I got to ask this, man, before we go, man. I don't know why you believe in me so much, brother, but you always have, man, and you're part of the reason why Mental Dialogue is still going, man. So I don't know, just a short sentence on why, man, because I don't know. I just know, you know, I remember, you know, just believing in you and you know, we did a lot of things together, man, and I know I had your back, man, but I don't quite know why, man, but you do, and why.
Well, it's really simple. You are out of a lot of people in this world, because all of us have facades. All of us, you know, try to present our best selves. All of us have a representative, and all of us, you know, we talk a game. We talk a good game. You out of, when I think about my best friend, you are one of the most genuine and true people that I've ever met, meaning you are comfortable in your own skin. You know who you are. You know what you're about. You're not worried or afraid about what other people necessarily think about that. And you've always stayed true to that. You've always been that genuine, true, you know, person who was comfortable with who you are and believed in who you were. And I feel like anyone, if there's anyone, let me say it this way, who approaches life in that way and walks a walk, talks a talk, and is genuine in everything they do, and on top of that is one of my best friends, how could I not support somebody like that? That's an example for me. You know, so that, if I had to boil it down, if you asked me that off the top of my head, that's the reason. You are a genuine, real, you know, people talk about people being real. Like, you represent that in terms of being genuine and true to who you are. And anybody who walks that walk, I mean, if somebody, you know, when you ask somebody who they are, it's not what they say. It's how they walk. It's how they talk. It's how they treat people. And that's always who you've been. How would I not support that?
Man, I'm just blown away and thankful, man, because you always have. I'm talking about, like, literally, like, boy, you know, you struggling, keep going, I got you. What Mental Dialogue needs, let me see if I can help you out. You've been there, brother. I mean, I look at you like Jay-Z, and this one verse, wait, you know, where he says, you know, how can I help you if we both struggling? So the win-win for me was, you know, to get rich and help the poor. And so
that's right.
That's who you are to me, man. And you know what I'm saying? It ain't just to me, though. I watch you go out and talk to these kids and how passionate you are. And, you know, you got that daughter, you know, your family that you going to leave another legacy with, man. But, you know, I could go on and on. But we're going to go ahead and, you know, wrap it up tonight, man, and just tell you that, man, I mean, I'm kind of touched, man, because you've always been so supportive. And I never really ever asked you why, man. So I'm touched by that, man. Because
that's
you really
real.
Have, you know, have my back. You know, really, and our whole circle has been that way. Tip that just called in. I got Mike
right.
Walker kissing me, whatever. So we got this amazing circle, man, that really just believed in one another, man. B-Funk, everybody, man. Everybody out there. Mickey, all of them, man. Just Vicky, all of y'all. And I'm just thankful, man. But I never knew why. And, you know, I never knew why. So thank you, bro. I don't want to keep saying that over and over, but that's it, bro.
No, that's true. But I think we all, you know, have to learn, all of us, you know, got to be able to learn how that we can do a lot more together than we can apart. And together not meaning we got to be physically together or be, you know, always doing things together, but meaning the support we have together. Because we talk about being self-made, and self-made doesn't mean you don't get help or support from others. It means that you come from nothing and you're making something of yourself. But we all need that that encouragement, that support, that belief, because we're going to have our own self-belief, but we can do a lot more together than we can apart in terms of believing in one another. And that's how I see it with you, and that's why I know it's not going to stop and it's going to win big, because it's innovative, it's great, and it's making an impact and a change on people that you don't even realize. So I'm excited to see what's coming next with Memphis Dialogue, and you know I'm a number one fan who always support it.
Absolutely, you have been, man. So moneymotivation.com, please go check out the website. You will see exactly what I'm talking about when I tell you this is high quality. I know everybody brags about their fame and stuff, but this brother right here just does it on the next level. And I'm just telling you, man, it's so high quality, but it's exactly who you are, man. And so if you, you know, if you're about that boss life, you got that hustle in you, the money motivation is definitely a way to look the part, because, you know, they say, you know, hey, to play good, you got to look good. Well, moneymotivation.com can definitely help
right.
with that. All right, brother, man. Thank you for everything. We'll do it again in the future. Appreciate you, man. Again, congratulations for the top 100 in Savoy Magazine. Go pick it up. Got Chadwick Boseman on the front for anybody looking for that. Savoy is an excellent magazine. I didn't know they were out in Atlanta, so I might need to catch up with them as well, just, you know, just for future reference or whatever, because one thing we got to be doing as a community is seek out our publications, whether they be print, media, television, or whatever, because the regular TV programming is doing our community no service. So go seek those out who are trying to show excellence, like this brother right here, Mark Ranger. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
My man, Montoya, I love you, brother. I appreciate you having me on. I love your platform. You know, and all the things I said are real. You know, you one of those individuals, and with this platform where you can look yourself in the mirror and you know who you are. And, you know, you never let anybody take from you what really makes you you. And that's what I love about you. That's what I love about this platform. And we're going to do some great things together, man. We got more to come in the future. So thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this Saturday show. Can you cheat on someone that you love? That is Saturday show, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. Go to the Facebook page at Mental Dialogue. The show is always playing up there. Here, a replay of this show on the Facebook page as well. So y'all hopefully tune in Saturday. And the next pop up, we'll hit you when it comes. Pop ups are always day of. Hope you like what we did. Hope you enjoyed Mark Ranger, my best friend. Love him literally like he's a blood brother. And hopefully y'all got something out of this tonight's Black Sock conversation with Black Sock and Cheese, Mental Dialogue pop up. See y'all Saturday, hopefully. Talk to you later.